Welcome to Spaghetti Lunchers, the web-building podcast, where we throw spaghetti at the wall, and it is up to you what sticks. I'm Kyle.
I'm Ethan. I want to get the fuck out of here. Do you have any good ideas of how I could do that?
We could go on a ship.
Ayo.
Ships is the episode
today. I don't give a shit.
Merriam-Webster's Dictionary defines love. Nope, defines a ship. That's one of my favorite tropes is people doing a speech by saying the definition.
I love it. No, I think it's great.
Sometimes even at a wedding speech, it actually does work.
Yeah,
sometimes
Webster's Dictionary defines
it's a trope,
ship.
But I think it's often okay. It's well executed.
If you use it well, it's fun.
Exactly. All right. Well, they define it as a large seagoing vessel.
Great. So now all we have to do is replace sea with anything else that isn't land. Because the phrase land ship.
Yeah.
I think that's just a tank or a car.
Yes, land ship, would be.
Spaceship, airship.
To be fair, the fifth definition.
Cosmos.
Because they have five on here is airship, airplane, spacecraft.
Bloodship?
I don't think that's a thing. Relationship?
Ah.
Friendship?
The most powerful form of magic.
Is love, if you watch Interstellar.
Fucking, I hate that movie.
Anyway, so
not a bad ship, like with the centrifugal force around it. That was a cool design.
Yeah, like
really
sci-fi
stupid
is just,
fucking movie though. Bad ripoff of Contact. I mean,
we're not going to get into this, but you should listen to Beyond the Screenplay. They just did an episode on Interstellar, and they're a far better podcast for talking about movies because they're experts. But generally, I think sci-fi ships that actually are like hard sci-fi and do physics with them, great. Because they end up making them feel so cool, and they really like the centrifugal force thing is like a through line. Like in The Expanse, they really do that a lot, where they always show like the ships, like the whole thing is like they have to have the mag boot in case they lose the
centrifugal force. They did it in Ender's Game with the battle school that also had a centrifugal force, and then the battles famously were in the center where there was no gravity.
Yeah,
but what's also fun is. I think 2001 A Space Odyssey is the most rigorous example of it outside of maybe Interstellar. You know, Kubrick was the first to hire all of these physicists to figure out how the ship would work.
It's an iconic movie for a reason.
And it also led to the creation in not so many ways of Star Wars, because George Lucas was like, hey, this isn't what everybody wants in their sci-fi. We just want some cool ships flying around, shooting lasers.
We actually just want fantasy in space is what he went with. And like, to be fair, like Star Wars is full of cool ass ships, the Star Destroyers, the Millennium Falcon, the Death Star, which is like
it's more ships, of a megastructure.
Like
I put that in a megastructure.
But the Star Destroyers are iconic. Like the coming over the camera just with the giant triangle.
The scream of the TIE fighters. I love noise.
Well, and just the image of them is, they're so...
It's so great. Star Trek, it's kind of a shame that we haven't mentioned Star Trek yet, because they set the stage for all different types of fancy ships in sci-fi all over the place. I mean, you've got the Klingon warbirds, the USS Enterprise, all really fantastic.
They do a cool job of blending what it would be like if you actually had an Earth-based organization, you know, with having the naming conventions that we deploy today with our naval ships, right? With the USS Enterprise feels like, you know, it's like, oh yeah, that tracks with how we all think about ships.
Yeah.
And shows the evolution of Navy will eventually just go to space and become Space Navy.
Yeah.
Which very cool. And
I agree with that.
And Othman's the name.
Plus the Borg cube.
Okay. And I think just quick shout out to my favorite name of a ship, which is the Pillar of Autumn, which is the ship in Halo that you go to in the first game. It's an iconic place in gaming and an iconic ship.
Kind of surprised you haven't mentioned the Citadel yet. You normally would have leapt at that chance.
I have intentionally left Mass Effect off to the side because it's so good. We have a whole episode dedicated to talking about good. But the Citadel is great. I think that is, as a mega ship, mega structure, strange thing. The Mass Effect relays, all that. It's all very cool. I think we should also just probably talk about water ships. The normal, let's go to the fantasy. We are primarily fantasy people. So
we
feel like we do have to talk about some fantasy ships. But there aren't, they're usually pretty.
I think the peak of them is the Nautilus from 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. That from Verne, piloted by Captain Nemo, like that was the first the fantasy sea ship. That was it for the longest time.
And now we have other things.
Now
we have the Black Pearl. I think to me that's like the modern iconic ship.
Just Battleship. The game.
Yeah. I understood what you were referring to.
Yeah, my face did not communicate that.
My face wasn't a lack of recognition. My face was what are you doing? Why are you
making a valid point?
Why are you bringing up Battleship?
Because I'm making a great point.
The movie starring Rihanna?
Yes, and Taylor Kitsch, who was underrated as Gambit, by the way, in X-Men Origins Wolverine. Best part of that movie.
Okay. It also properly rated in Friday Night Lights.
Nah, I haven't seen a single episode.
It's great.
I know. I'm missing out. I've been told that many times.
Anyway.
I have to say what really kicked this off for me was in Worlds Beyond Number, The Wizard, the Witch, and the Wild One. We're building to the end of the campaign. Spoilers. Spoilers, not really. For one of the more recent episodes. But in one of the more recent episodes, it opens with Brennan doing an old-timey like radio announcer explanation of the flagship of the wizard citadel. The ship is called the Epiphany, and he gets into the details, and it was really listening to the details of how it was made that got me hooked into this. So he says, the Epiphany is a skycraft in the Khemsarzan Empire's fleet and a capital ship. It features a dirigible constructed using over 20,000 yards of arcane ruby weave, and its spell rope warding was threaded with over a ton and a half of gold bullion. The ship has 6 gun decks, housing 144 guns, and its smallest arcane cannon has over 1,200 unique phrases in the lingua arcana in molten platinum script. The ship is crewed by at least 500 sailors of the Azure Battalion, 200 name-cloaked wizards of the Citadel, and 80 to 100 war mages. Its support crew includes 30 to 50 bound spirits and imperial constructs, and 90 pilots and artificers serving the ship's 3 dozen helicopter galathopter support craft. And listening to that detail, I got me thinking. It just opened up a world for me for some reason. I can't exactly explain why. It's probably just because Brennan's fucking amazing.
It's just, and it's very descriptive.
And it's very descriptive. And it gets into the details. It gets into the, what is this, the construction materials, what powers it, which you don't really think about. No one thinks about, someone did at some point in Star Wars, because there are articles, I looked them up, about the types of material that constructed the Executor and what powered it and all of that. But it was great to have it really put in your face in a creative way. And that sort of was just like opening the window. Like, oh.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on to our noodles and our descriptions.
Tease it for me.
I'm not sure that works there.
Okay.
What do you got?
Green thumb.
Okay.
I'm going to go first.
Okay.
Kyle, have you ever heard of Vivianite?
I have heard of the material that has been brought up on this podcast many a time.
So I'm returning to the world of the House of Nyx.
Okay. It's coming back. Our favorite. This is episode 4 in the series of like developing the world of Nyx.
But this time I'm not actually talking about the House of Nyx.
Okay.
I'm talking about the nation that is resisting it, which we've called, still for lack of a better term, the nation of Arbalest.
As a quick recap of the House of Nyx, they were a people who had very strong opinions about death. They had a great mausoleum that they believed that you had to be buried in there, full stop. So they were going to take corpses from other places in the world to deny them funeral rites, to give them funeral rites according to their religion. And then they were able to use those bodies over time, they realized, to harvest their own material called Vivianite, which then became Nyxite, is what we called it.
And then Nock was the final name we decided on, I think.
But then, there was a whole, like, let's go grab the dead of around the world. And then it became a weird capitalist snowball, and it became an empire. And it was a very, there's a lot of material within the 2 episodes that we talked about it, megastructures and magical substances. So I recommend you listen to them. But the main thing being the death and the body retrieval.
Right. basically the House of Nyx gets its power from death. Not saying they worship death in the like skulls and macabre and blah, 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 all that shit. They do. They get their power from death. The nation of Arbalis has these big ass trees, these magical trees that are the source of their power. These trees are the reason why they are the most powerful nation capable of resisting the House of Nyx. But more than that, they are a philosophical counterpoint because the big ass trees give the nation of Arbalis power from life to counterpoint the power of death that is the House of Nyx.
Okay.
These ships
are big ass trees.
Are not big ass trees. They are grown from big ass trees.
Okay.
So whenever they see a new branch starting to form on the big ass tree,
okay,
they have a set of arcane kind of elvish woodland magical rituals and equipment that they can use to sculpt and shape the growing branch into a ship.
Okay.
Into an airship using the wood itself, the magical wood, along with the sap, the leaves, the tree, you know, all of these materials that normally go into the tree to help make a flying ship. I haven't quite figured out exactly how they got to this point. I'm hand waving it and saying
it doesn't matter.
Do it through magic, but they are long sword shaped trees, so to speak, sort of like branches. They look elvish. They're not just like tree branches flying all over the place.
Yeah, they're very clean lines, very
graceful,
aerodynamic.
They fly through magic, but the point that is important
is how do they fly? Magic. Okay.
But the point of them is that they are alive. That is important. That they are actually sort of self-healing. You know, if you scratch them a little bit, they heal a little bit. They need sunlight.
So if you
enable to stay alive, right? They are effectively still plants. They are still bound by plants. By plant logic. Sorry. Thank you. They are still bound by plant logic, but because they are grown from the seed of, or from off of one of these magical big ass trees, they contain some of the power of the tree.
Okay.
And they maintain the bond to the people of Arbalis who are also bonded to the tree. So that's how they are staffed by all of these people that have a sort of sympathetic or empathetic bond with their ship. Again, furthering the philosophical counterpoint to the House of Nyx.
Okay. So I really like the idea that they're bound by the plant logic. I think that's a good addition, because I think one of the things with these types of ideas is when we're building them on top of a really specific idea that we've already done, mm-hmm. which like we love, but then also like from a flexibility standpoint,
it gets harder.
But I think the flexibility of having a ship built out of a big ass tree,
a magical big ass tree,
I think like that you can take it and apply it in any world to the purpose of this podcast. And then you can also really take this plant logic, they heal. That's really unique. And I think super interesting and worth diving into when you have like a large number of them. So say the people of Arbalis.
They can't heal massive. If they get broken in half, they can't heal that. But.
So you say. So here's my point. Say you have a large navy of mm-hmm. these fleet. You have a fleet and there's a lot of damage to several of them, and then they just put those ones off to like they're going off to be repaired, but they're just basically left alone in mm-hmm. a field, and they're watered a little bit, they're given sun, they heal on their own just fine. Minimum maintenance to get them back to full strength. So you can have 40 of them that you leave in a field, and you just need like one guy to just make sure no one tries to steal them, and you water them.
Teacher. I think that's a great point. I want to give another limitation, though, because I think if you could have them heal up from nothing like that,
I don't think from nothing.
But I know, but I'm saying, so I think that there needs to be some sort of branch or seed or something or a piece of the root or something, some core part of the big ass tree in there that needs to be protected sort of as the engine equivalent or the core equivalent, something like that, right? There needs to be, maybe it's a piece of fruit from the big ass tree that needs to be protected. If that core is there, then it can grow, but it cannot regrow entirely to its original full size. But trees can grow together and intertwine. So maybe if you put two to nearby and have them grow, then they start twisting and intersecting together.
Okay. So, so say you have.
Also, their lasers are just sunlight because they're absorbing sunlight.
They have lasers?
Yeah, why not?
Okay. It's like you buried the lead on that one. Like,
nah, I just threw it in there. It just came up. I was just thinking, I'm like, oh, they need sunlight. They absorb all this solar energy. Yeah, sure. They can use it as lasers. Why not? Just decided it.
So, yeah, if it's a minor damage, it can heal on its own.
Heal on its own. As
if it's major damage or catastrophic damage, then they can basically take scraps of multiple ships and just kind of put them next to each other and let nature run its course. And I'm gonna hand wave it and say that, but they follow plant logic much quicker.
Yeah. It's a magical, like, big-ass tree.
Yeah, yeah.
We're talking,
it'll be like weeks to regrow, not 45 years.
No, I agree. I envisioned it a bit like the way that they do crossbreeding and hybridization of fruit, where you start with, like, every Macintosh apple can be traced back to the original Macintosh apple tree, because they just kept cutting off branches and using it to seed other trees.
Yeah.
Kind of the same thing. Once you got the first ship, you can start every ship sort of comes from that first one. They sort of just started branching it off and what?
Grafting.
And just grafting. Yeah. And just so everything sort of, the whole fleet is spawned from this thing. And then in my head I started breaking them out into different classes, so you've got the small ones, which are seedlings, the next size up are branches, all the way up to the massive flagship, which is the Yggdrasil class sword ship. Because
Yggdrasil class sword ship. So this is a world where the Yggdrasil exists. Or is it an idea?
It's just an idea. Yeah. Maybe Yggdrasil was the first tender gardener that made the first ship. I don't know.
Yeah, you just like the word Yggdrasil.
I just like the phrase Yggdrasil class warship. I just think that's really cool.
I think there's some play that you can do with the naming of the classes for sure, and the naming of the ships to be like the get into the arboreal elements. Yeah, because. Yeah, an arbalist is also, there's like the crossbow.
Cannon.
Yeah, or whatever.
It's yeah.
Like, it's just like, well, the word's too close.
Yeah, it doesn't
work. You're too close, man.
That's the core of the idea. And so it started out as thinking, what is a philosophical counterpoint to this death-focused, I'm not going to say death-worshipping, death-focused, death-obsessed nation is a nation powered by life. And what would that look like? Is they need an air force, and so
in a fantasy world that is not normal. So this is like an interesting counterpoint as well, because it's like you're going up, you're getting closer to the sun, you're getting closer to life. There's some, maybe there is some weird Icarus analog in there.
Sure.
That you could even throw into the story to be like, oh well, they got too close to the sun and then they came crashing down and then Nyx wins or whatever. I think it's cool. I think it's a cool addition to the world that already existed, and it's a cool idea that exists in a vacuum if you remove the names.
Yeah, the plant logic, the plant logic really, really sells it.
Yeah, the plant logic is the idea.
Yeah,
and I also, the other stuff is just the flavor.
It also helps for me to think of, you know, the ship. As soon as I started thinking about the plant logic, then the inside of the ship also started coming clear to me. So the inside of the ship, the bridge, for example, in my head looks like an arboretum with a domed or an open top, lots of plant life growing inside of it. But in the middle of it, there is a big pond or a small lake, depending on the size of the ship, obviously, but that keeps the water flowing because you'd need to keep, you know, they use water for fuel they use water and sunlight for fuel. So you have to keep...
And they fly into clouds to harvest it.
Oh, fuck yeah. I hadn't even thought of that, but
well, you didn't drop the water thing yet, so
yeah. No, but yeah, that's great.
The dynamic that they would have with being in the air is great.
And maybe that's why they become airships, because instead of trying to fuel all these ground ships by finding water sources and digging, they're like, oh, look at all the free water up there.
Free water.
And then they just go get up there and do that. I imagine that it's piloted sort of like the Nautiloids in Baldur's Gate, which look like the inside of a creature's brain. This would, you'd be piloting it by using tree branches and flowers and buds and all sort of biopunk type vibey things.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Let's move on to the next thing.
Yeah. So the seed chips.
All right. So
that doesn't belong there, you said.
Yeah. This is more about the story of the ship and not the ship itself.
Cool.
This is a landlocked country.
Cool.
This is, in my brain, we're going to use like a Mongol analog.
Okay.
Great conquerors. They like, they've taken on anybody and everybody, but they don't have a navy.
They're
not even near the water, but they did take on a country that was a great power that was a strong navy. Hmm. And they defeated them without a navy. And to show how superior, because they basically then like took out their ships at port and like just got on small ships and went over there and just killed them all on the ships, that kind of thing. The logistics of how they won this war are for you to figure out, but it's like, you know, they won on land and then they just kind of went to sea and took over their ships. But they didn't have their own ships to do that. They just kind of like hijacked whatever they could.
Got it.
But so then they took the dreadnought, the capital ship of mm-hmm. this country, huge imposing thing, but their country's entirely surrendered. You know, they don't like, no one's captaining the ship anymore. So they take the ship and they bring it inland all the way thousands of miles to their Ulaanbaatar, wherever this is, far from the sea. And they just put this ship in a little pond, a little lake, to just show, we are so powerful. We took this ship from the people over there who thought they would conquer the world with this. No. Like, the sea's useless. Land is where you win. We took it, and we brought it overland, and here it sits. And now there are multiple things you could be doing with this ship. It could be used as... It could be preserved perfectly mm-hmm. as a testament to they were a good enemy. We respect them. We are going to, you know, and maybe because they are conquered now, like they're part of our empire. We're not going to belittle them, but we will just, and we will continue to show, oh, that was good fight. But like, you know, obviously we won. And so it's like almost like a tourist attraction. Or you go the other way. It's a complete joke. It's turned into like a restaurant, a tavern. People are like drinking on this place. It's like a pleasure barge in the middle of the city, really leaning into like, you're insignificant, whatever you want to do with it. Or it's just a trophy and left alone to rot.
I got a third option, fourth option for you, which is what made it the special dreadnought and the flagship was that it was also the communication hubs for all of the other naval ships, and so now they just control the navy from the middle of the land, from the landlocked area.
I don't like it.
And that's okay. I don't care.
Because they specifically don't want a navy. They don't have a navy. They still don't have a navy.
You don't think a navy would be useful at some point?
I think it's a pride thing. I think they let their ships go do the thing. And if anybody attacked their ships, they would get on passenger ships and just fucking go over there and conquer you by land. That's, I don't know how it is, but I want it to be like they are arrogantly dismissive of
the arrogance is the important part.
Yeah, like there's a if you are doing this, you are a hubristic society, I think, or hubristic ruler. You don't just pull this shit off because you're like, you know, logical and humble. You probably would keep using the dreadnought ship as its purpose.
Maybe.
They brought it there because they don't care about being a naval power.
I think I could see it going either way. I will entertain your your hubris, your the hubristic.
You can entertain all
focus,
you want. My idea. It isn't a communication hub.
That's fine. That idea is going to grow out firmly in my head like a big ass tree.
No, I mean it is a cool idea in a different context. I can definitely see it being a great idea.
But in this particular story, no, it doesn't work. But what I will say is, I think it's a trophy. I like it. I like the idea of it being a trophy. Yeah. I like the idea of it also being. Yeah, I think they treat it as like a throne. It is the seat of power. It is the throne. It's like the Iron Throne, right? Like the Iron Throne in Game of Thrones. I've just said throne a lot.
I'm sorry.
Our next episode, Thrones.
You did suggest talking about Thrones recently.
It's a great idea. But like it is forged. Yeah. The Iron Throne is forged out of the melted swords of all of Aegon's enemies.
Yeah.
Right. So this to me, it's like, it's not so much, it is a trophy, but it is practical also. So like it becomes a throne, a seat of power, a symbol of conquest, of authority, right? It is not a joke.
Yeah.
I think they're smart enough to do, right? It would be like conquering a king or conquering a land and then turning the skull of its ruler into a wine glass.
I think
that kind of thing.
I think you're right. I think it's not a throne. I think it's the base of operations for their army.
All right.
Because then they continue to like pour salt at the wound and be like, yeah, we'll use this ship for our army. And like, this is where, because I think at that point you already have a throne. You've got a pretty prominent throne if you're like already conquering all these people. So I think trophies makes a lot of sense. I think making it into a throne could be really cool. Where I think making it into something that is the domain of this ruling empire, but isn't the seat of their power, full stop.
See, now that I've started talking about, I'm thinking Genghis Khan taking over the steppes, right? I'm also thinking the Dothraki now a little bit. I love it being a trophy and a base of operations for their army, but I think what could make this work really well is them being a non-technologically advanced society, because now I have this image of them pulling a giant submarine-sized ship across miles of land using just rolling logs and rope and just thousands of people doing this. Like, they're that committed to it. I think it's just sort of like you
like the fun imagery.
The fun imagery of it. Yeah. Them just being that stubborn and determined, not stubborn in a bad way, stubborn, like, we are going to do this. We are bringing our kill home.
Yeah.
No matter what it takes.
Yeah. And I think it's important to frame it as this is a kill. This isn't like, we're not looting it.
No.
We are doing this as, and that's why I really like the idea of it being the army, because like they are still lesser than this emperor, this ruler.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want your ship in my palace. You are beneath me.
Yeah.
But the army
in my pond?
Yeah, in my pond, and the army can use your, like, this is a nice facility. It's well made.
Right.
We'll use it.
It's hot in the summer. This will provide excellent shade.
Yeah. And, you know, like, oh, you have like a control room, or like you have like a war room already in this ship. Yeah. This can be the generals can use this as their quarters.
Right. For their big planning table.
Yeah. It's got nice bedrooms too. You know, give it to them. There's a tauntingness to it that I think works. And I think,
I
think you're right. Just the trophy is the way to go. And
You could do it any other way. I'm just.
It also could be really funny to make it like the pleasure barge. Like, just like, this is just, it's a pleasure barge that doesn't leave the ship. Like, it stays in a little pond, but they like take the dock away. Party started. And then they like, it's like, well, you could just.
It's like 20 feet.
You can wade through the water, like, just to get back to shore. But they're like, kind of like, you can make it almost a joke to say, you know, it depends on the flavor and the tone of the world and of the leader, mostly.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's that idea.
That's that.
All right. Let's move on to some frozen lasagna. Bing.
Classic Imperial shit. Their navy, their sky navy, their void navy, their space navy, whatever the fuck you want to call it, I don't care, is massive, so massive that it requires three flagships. They are the Throne, which is the control ship, the Penance, which is the warship, and then the Sanctuary, which is the traveling mobile sanctuary hub for all of its soldiers. So everywhere you go, it's sort of like a mobile, sort of like a mobile empire where everything is centered around these three ships. That's all. Pretty standard classic stuff, but I like the names, the Throne, the Penance, and the Sanctuary.
Okay.
That's all. What you got, Ding?
Not interesting. Literally the same thing, except for it's one ship, and it is the entire empire exists there. Yeah. They have no land. As they built these ships on islands, and they have slowly been building it bigger and bigger. They only have one ship. There is nothing
sort of like the Ecumenopolis from Valyrian and the City of a Thousand Planets. It starts as the International Space Station. They just keep adding on different ships.
See, that's world building I did not remember from the movie because it was just fucking awful. Not good. So
I thought that was cool. That was like the only cool thing.
Cool. I do remember
with
that,
like,
actually.
The International Space Station as the core of a planet.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I guess when we did watch it, we did comment that the world building is actually quite good, that they do some cool stuff in the movie. The acting and the writing
awful.
Tanks it.
Like, barely watchable.
I mean, we did watch it, though.
I zoned out for a lot of it.
Fair enough. Anyway, we're moving on. So, what stuck for you?
I'm stuck on my... on my seed ships. I'm going to keep thinking about this.
Seed. Yeah.
Because they're seeds, plants. Yeah, I'm still playing with plant words, botany terms, whatever. Yeah. But yeah, it's really fun to think of all of the different aspects of plant logic and apply it to this, which is an approach that I've been digging into a little bit more for world building, is let's take a real world concept and then just add just the tiniest teeny bit of magic to it, right? And just see what we can do with an existing structure.
Yeah.
So thinking, like, look at the principles of mechanics, replace mechanism with, like, arcane. So you've got arcanics and, like, hey, there's a cool structure there, right? Like, go forth and play.
Yes.
And
I have seen you do this for a bit now. Yeah. It is, you know, it is a good approach.
Yeah, it's just fun. It's just a fun thought exercise. So that's sort of where, that's what stuck for me. What about you?
I don't know. I mean, a lot of it was fine. I think were good ideas and it was fine. None of it wowed me. I think what really stuck for me is, you know, is just getting back to Nyx and continuing to discover that world in full through multiple ideas where it's kind of got its claws into us and we keep coming back to it and we get to build out that whole world, which is usually not what we do. We usually move on to create setting agnostic ideas, but when we get back to settings that we both know, that'll always stick for me a lot more.
And it's always a great feeling. It's a lot of fun to channel that feeling of discovery and not invention. I love invention, but
the discovery is the best world building.
That idea didn't, it wasn't like, oh, I was thinking there, oh, what kind of ships do the fucking arbalists use?
Came to you.
No, it was just, oh, yeah, they have magic trees because they're the source of life and the counterpoint to the army of death. And so it would just grow, of course. Everything would just grow and be alive, like, completely.
Yeah. Anyway, well, that's what stuck for us.
Let us know what stuck for you.
Emails in the show notes.
Thanks for listening.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.